Welcome to Crazy Simple. I'm your co-host, Dr. Christopher Taylor.
And I am Lori Vann.
And we're two therapists in Texas.
Life is complicated. We're here to try to make it a bit more simple because sometimes the solution to our problems is crazy simple.
So relax, have a laugh, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Crazy Simple. My name is Dr. Christopher Taylor.
I am Lori Vann.
And I hate social media.
So please explain why you dislike it so.
I really have never liked it. You know, I know that it's responsible for all these wonderful, great things in the universe, like filters and housewife drama. It's great. It's wonderful. But
I'm not a cat.
You know, I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like any of it. I don't like the fakeness that it brings out in us. I don't like the oh, look how great my life is sort of attitude that people have on it. I just like the wasted amount of time that people spend looking at stuff on TikTok. It's just like, and then it just builds this reward structure around being liked by people you have never met. So anyway, that's my rant.
Little reward systems in our brain.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they do that. Yeah. Yeah. So I just don't like them. And I'm not on them. I know that's very like curmudgeon-y, old man, get off my lawn kind of attitude, but that's where I'm at right now in this stage of my life. So.
But you have social media people that do it for you, for the business. So you've got that.
Sure. Covered. Yeah. I'll be a hypocrite and be on social media. That's fine. For our business to try to put some good in the world. Okay. Try to put some good in the world. Yes, we do have a team of people that do post stuff on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, maybe. I don't know. I'm not involved in that process. I don't want to be involved in that process. I feel like a part of it is sort of like selling my soul. So, you know. But apparently I have to. So I'm doing it.
Or I'm paying somebody, much.
Paying somebody to do it.
It's social media, as with, I think, a lot of things, it's for business a necessary evil. And with all things, there are pros and cons to it. And it is important to acknowledge there are some positives that come with social media, like YouTube.
Please enlighten us. Tell us about these positives, Lori.
So on YouTube, how else would you figure out how to do some things unless someone posted videos on how to do some of those things?
Public library. Boom. I got a library card and it's free. Well, it's not free. I pay taxes, but that's a different thing.
So, but even they have computers there that have internet access. So that
I only use the ones that have the slidey thing on it, like the microfilm from the old newspapers. That's the only one I use. That's it. That's the only one I use. I don't use the computers.
Do you do the little card sorter too? The little paper?
The Dewey Decimal sort? System? Yes.
That's right. Yes.
I love the Dewey Decimal System. Thank you very much.
What if you get paper cuts though? I mean, think about for a librarian, if she gets paper cuts from filing all those books, is that workers' comp?
I would think that would be workers' comp. Yeah.
Things that go through my mind. But so, okay, for those of us that maybe don't live near a library or maybe their public library is limited in its resources, then you do have YouTube that can assist with that. I know one of the reasons I got on to Facebook was because that was the only way I found out what my younger cousins were doing. Yeah. Because otherwise I had no clue because you know, the days of writing letters, my grandmother wrote wonderful long letters to all the grandkids, that those days, well, they're gone. Sort of like people figuring out how to write in cursive. It's like long gone are those days, so it seems. So for those of us that do know how to write in cursive, we now have a secret language that we can use to the younger generation. they'll have no idea what we're writing.
Yeah. No, but you are right, though. I mean, a friend of mine does have a podcast called TUFO, and they have a wonderful connection in social media where they work with the spouses of addicts. So it's a really, really great program. They do a lot of free stuff on Facebook and Facebook groups. And so all that I think is really good. So.
And there are the benefits of that connection part, because think of during the lockdowns, social media was one of the ways people could still feel connected to their loved ones that they weren't allowed to go fly and see. And whether they did that through, you know, an app, a FaceTime app or something else, I mean, it helped keep some level of sanity to have that outlet. Now, it's also free to advertise. So small businesses that don't have budgets, social media is a great way to start getting their information out there. For myself, I will say that I have more social media accounts for the business than one could ever imagine. They are not always up to date, but like for the Institute for NSSI, it has a TikTok, and no, I will never dance on it. I'm just going on record right now. It's not happening. Okay. Maybe if you get me to 100,000 subscribers on the Institute TikTok, then I will strongly consider a dance. So we'll go with that.
Strongly consider. You won't commit.
So we're going to see about, and there's a, you know, Instagram for the Institute, but Instagram, I have two other accounts on that for business, because I have one for the professional speaking side. I have one for the coaching side. LinkedIn is a necessity. And so you have your professional individual profile LinkedIn, and then you have your business company LinkedIn if you're an entrepreneur. On Facebook, dear heavens, I have, you know, the individual sort of private business one. And then there are different pages for different things that I've created, whether that's for the Institute, whether that's an online group that's just for those that engage in self-injury, that's very private, that has over 400 individuals from across the world, that they can all go there and feel, okay, I'm not alone in this. But there's a ton of stuff out there, and it's very easy to get off focus with what you really need to do with the priority setting and priority setting in life, to make sure that whether it's social media or anything doesn't overtake your life. It's social media is not supposed to be a replacement for personal, like in person, face to face interactions, because psychologically we need in person interactions.
Yep, just like the cavemen of old, we need to sit around a fire and eat rhino meat and tell stories of being chased by the rhino, laughing about Fred who got hit by the rhino, and then talking about how brave we were to slay the rhino around the women folk around the fire. We have to do that, yes. That is still a requirement in our culture. But no, we are psychological beings. We are relational in nature. I mean, since the very beginning of early man, however you want to look at it, I mean, we've always got together in caves and around a fire, you know? So I think we have to have that. I don't think there's anything wrong with being an introvert and wanting aloneness or alone time or regularly being alone or alone time. But still, it's at some point, you know, we need that community. So yeah, I think it's very important.
Yeah, we were designed to be social creatures. Now, you know, how social you are, that varies between the introvert and extrovert scale. If we were all one or the other, this society would have big old problems. So it's great that we have such a variety of individuals out there, but everybody needs to have some kind of in-person social contact for their psychological well-being. Because if you totally isolate and you don't have contact with humans on a regular basis, then you end up going into the woods and writing a manifesto, and then you end up on the news.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, this is true.
But so on the mental health piece of it, there is, there's a lot of controversy out there. And Jonathan Haidt, and I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name correctly, he recently wrote a book, The Anxious Generation. And he's been vocal about the role of social media and mental health. And he's not the only one. There have been plenty of other authors and counselors, and you know, even the U.S. government, the U.S. Surgeon General has come out and said, look, you need to be at least 16, preferably older than that, before you get into social media, which fully support on a lot of those points. So what are some of your thoughts of, does social media contribute to mental health issues?
So I believe that it does. Again, I gave a really curmudgeon-y speech, not but like 9 minutes ago. So obviously my position is clear. But I do believe that since 2009, when certain apps were available on your phone, which led to the increase in teens and preteens being active on social media, around the same time, we saw a stark increase in teen and preteen, which we didn't even really measure before 2009, preteen suicides, which is just appalling. And I know, you know, as an expert in self-harm, Lori, a huge rise in self-harm, self-injury behaviors. You know, we saw that as well. And so, you know, I mean, I know that's collated data, right? That's not causational data, you know? So it doesn't necessarily prove, but I mean, look, this was the same argument that the tobacco companies made about cigarettes in the beginning. We were like, well, just because certain people get cancer while they're smoking our product doesn't mean that we're causing it. Sure. Okay, fine. Sure. But it's pretty obvious, you know, what's going on. So, you know, I think that's kind of where we are right now. You know, I know the Surgeon General said that sitting is the new smoking. I think that's wrong. I think social media is the new smoking is what it is. Or vaping, the new vaping. I don't know. Whatever kids do these days. But so, I mean, I think social media does. It has really led to some very negative behaviors in relationships for individuals. And I do believe that it is addictive.
No, I agree. I've witnessed it firsthand over the decades of working with tweens and teens and young adults and the negative impact that social media can have. So I remember way back in the day when I think Zynga was one of the very first social media platforms. And
Zynga?
Yeah. Okay. I think that was the
I don't
the
even know name. What that is. What is that?
It was like 2006.
Oh my gosh.
It was early on. And then they got bought out then they disappeared because then you had MySpace.
Oh, this was before MySpace. Wow.
Yeah. It was the predecessor of it. Wow. But I remember a mom coming in at that point, even that early in this process, and she took pictures and would print up what her daughter was posting. And it was disturbing stuff. I mean, it was pictures of her self-injury, but she was talking with other teens about self-injury and suicide and also some other inappropriate sexual content types of things. And right then, social media started to go, oh, we've got a problem here. And that was one teen that became two and three, and it's just gone up from there. The Netflix documentary of The Social Dilemma, which I strongly encourage every parent to watch it before you give your kid technology. Mm-hmm. It's be a well-informed parent.
Yeah.
And even for counselors, I strongly encourage you to watch it because you need to understand the psychology of social media.
Yes.
You need to understand how a professor at Stanford helped contribute to a lot of these problems and how social media has a lot of these manipulative things built into it to intentionally make it addictive because it is playing on the pleasure centers of our mind. Mm-hmm. So it's, and you know, that the social dilemma goes into a lot of the psychology and the great hypocrisy of those in Silicon Valley that help develop a lot of these apps, and they do not allow their own children on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yikes.
So the, yeah, one of the things that stood out with that particular documentary is there's a psychologist, and he said it's right about 2010, we saw the hockey stick happen. So on a chart, it's like, okay, we see these gradual increases in mental health issues, suicide, self-injury. And then with the release of Facebook, when that got going, you see this hockey stick where all of a sudden there's a dramatic spike in mental health situations and risk factors. And I don't think it's leveled off yet. It's because every time you might start to get a hold of one, there's a new one that comes up. And I've done a lot of radio interviews about, you know, how to help parents with figuring out what your kids are doing online and the different code words and acronyms and all that. And the thing is, as soon as you learn one, well, teenagers figure it out and they'll change it up and they'll create a whole new vocabulary. It's one of the issues with social media and trying to get rid of posts about eating disorders or self-injury is because there's always going to be the workaround.
Yep.
There's always going to be some way they figure out how to still post that content.
Yep. So we can't change it. We can't stop it. We can't really, you know, be an oppressive overlord as much as parents might like to at times. So what can we do?
Well, one, I think it's having those educational discussions with your tween or teen before they get technology. It's one, the parents' responsibility to be fully informed of what's out there, that they can get classes, that they need to talk with professionals, maybe even, you know, talk with the police department of what are some of the concerns? What would you recommend that parents do? Because I guarantee a lot of the police departments do have recommendations for parents of how to keep your kids safe online and not a statistic.
Not Dallas. Not Dallas PD.
Well,
they're just going to tell us that they have real crime to deal with and they're going to tell you to leave.
Well, I can't speak to Dallas PD, but maybe...
My friend had his truck stolen like 2 weeks ago, right out of the parking lot. Called the cops and they said they would not be dispatching anybody. Literally. So they had to like walk to the police station and he was like, somebody stole my truck. And they were like, oh, it's probably already in Mexico. And it was like, okay. So like, what do I do? And they're like, here's a one page form, write down everything. We'll stamp it. And you just take it to your insurance. It was like, okay. That was it. Terrible. Anyway, sorry. That's a bit of a sidetrack there.
So, but there are some.
There are some. Yes, there's some
that will
and public libraries
and help
and public libraries.
There you go.
You really should. We like underutilize the public library system. It is an amazing system.
We do. I do support public libraries. They're a wonderful resource. And if we don't use them, we will lose them. And that will be a tragedy if that occurs. But there's a lot of information out there for parents to get educated first. And then you sit down with your kid and you educate them. Mm-hmm. You know, say there are bad actors on social media. There are a lot of kidnappings that happen because of social media. There's a lot of trafficking that happens. And then, you know what? It's okay, and I strongly encourage, have a technology contract with your kid. These are the expectations. These are the rules. These are the consequences to it. First and foremost is your academics and your safety. If those are compromised, technology goes bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
There are limitations. So it's those are the quick hit thoughts.
All right, so to make it crazy simple, one, educate yourself. Two, have an open, honest, and safe discussion with your children. And three, set appropriate boundaries for them and for you, by the way.
Yes.
So with that, I am Dr. Christopher Taylor.
And I am Lori Vann.
And this is Crazy Simple.